This is CliffCentral.com.
Here's a powerful thing. I mean, it's got a lot of firepower. If you can figure out a way to wrestle that fear to push you from behind rather than stand in front of you, that's very powerful.
I have a dream.
Multiplying leadership, moving society, the millennial way.
You don't want to end up going after goals and dreams and neglect yourself.
Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Dao.
Listen, take control. Take control of your city. This is the instrument of your liberation.
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Identify yourself to the world.
Youth Leadership Platform.
And just like that, it's another Feel Good Monday, and you are tuned in to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Dao, at Simply Bongani across all social media platforms. Thank you for choosing CliffCentral.com, and welcome to a brand new week. We start off the week with some sad news. I mean, over the last 2 weeks, we've been mourning and celebrating as well the life of Pro Kid, amongst other very esteemed artists that have shaped the different platforms and industries within the South African entertainment and other industries for people like myself and other emerging young talent to be able to create, dominate, and to carve out better futures for themselves. So RIP to Pro Kid. Some interesting stuff happening at Tesla. Arianna Huffington taking on Elon Musk about his decisions to take Tesla private and everything that's been going on. It's pretty interesting. But what's more interesting is what we have for you today. Today is the hashtag CEO Roundtable, and I've got distinguished guests. And this is per the norm. The Youth Leadership Platform, we bring you the best and most invigorating minds to stimulate your minds as well, to help you with some helpful advice and information to, so you can be able to be better people in shaping and moving society the Youth Leadership Platform way. So I'll go ahead and introduce the first CEO on our panel. And she is about the menstrual revolution, quote unquote. And her name, and the CEO of Lindiwe Sanitary Pads, I beg your pardon, that is Lindiwe Nguna Khopa. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Thank you, Bangali.
Awesome. Thank you for hanging with us.
Thank you for having me here.
just to jump at it already, take us through your childhood. Help us understand Lindiwe sitting across from me.
So Lindiwe, I always say, is a wanted child.
Okay.
The girl they've been waiting for, mm-hmm. after six boys. So they've been trying all this time to get me. I always say to my brothers that they had you because they were trying to get to me.
Oh,
you know?
Shouts. Okay.
Yes. So
they must know.
Yeah, they must know. Yeah. And I'm the boss, you know. Yes. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, mm-hmm. With a dad who had three wives, and all the moms would work in his business.
Sure.
So all my life, I've never been exposed to what I call the working class.
Okay.
It has always been about business. And
so all the influences, your parents, your brothers and sisters in the family business.
So it has always been about business.
Sure.
And me. So after varsity, the only thing that made sense for me was obviously to start my own business as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that has been my childhood and the influence that my childhood has on what I've become as a grown woman now.
Sure. Mm. Tell us a bit about Lindiwe Sanitary Pads. Like, what inspired the idea and what are you hoping to achieve with the business itself?
So I always say my story is sad yet exciting.
Okay.
So long story short, an insurance company had a call out about 3 years ago to say, we're looking for entrepreneurs who have run successful businesses, whom we can give franchises to. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, what they will do is they'll give their franchises to their successful salespeople. But they found that being a successful salesperson does not necessarily make you a good business person, of course. So there was that call out. And then I just like, okay, let me just apply, you know. It's an opportunity. I'm a business person, you know. If there's an opportunity to make money, let me make money. Okay, fine. Then I applied. Long story short, at the end of the day, they selected seven people, six men, and I was the only woman nationwide. Shucks. So we went through that.
Okay, that's already problematic. Just there.
Fortunately or unfortunately for me, I was 3 months pregnant at the time, and I disclosed, okay, I'm 3 months pregnant. Here's the opportunity. And also, I was relying on the experience of my first pregnancy, because then I was younger and all of that, so I never experienced any problems, so into the program now of being trained in insurance. Remember, I'm a good business person, I'm a successful business person, but I do not have insurance background, so I needed to be taught on insurance. I had to go through a 6 months program of training and stuff. Right, now I'm in my eighth month, you know, going for nine before giving birth. Now, I could not take it. Energy levels dropped and all of that, right? So, and I didn't get the franchise at the end of the day. And I felt like the insurance company was not sensitive to me as a woman and the plight that I was facing, because obviously, I felt that the ground levels were not, you know, the ground was not level.
The men
had an unfavorable, they had an advantage, an unfair advantage over me, because I was pregnant at the time, heavily pregnant. Now I needed to slow down, but the environment was not conducive for me. You know, I was not allowed to slow down. So yes, then I said, you know what? There's a lot of young women out there like myself
who are experiencing some of the experiences that you have.
Some one way or the other, women are experiencing all these discriminations or disadvantages because of them being women. Because there was nowhere I could take down the pregnancy and say, let me put it on hold. And
which is sad, right? Because there's nothing you can do about that.
And you know, with me, it was already there by the time I started the program. So there was nowhere I could prevent it. So I said, okay, fine, it has happened to me. So what? Then I went into, okay, well, how else can I help other women, young women? You know, because on issues that they do not have a choice on, then I thought, okay, young girls are missing school, you know, every day because they can't afford sanitary pads. But then
which is a big problem in our country.
It's a very big problem. But what is even bigger is the fact, why are we not looking at why are they not affording sanitary pads? Because people are coming on board. Mostly men, but not always men, are coming in on board and making it easier for women to, the programs that are there now are making it easier for women to have access to sanitary pads. But I'm saying we need to change that. We need to move away from a situation where we want to make sanitary pads accessible. We should go beyond that. We should say women should be part of the value chain of the production of sanitary pads.
That's a game changing mindset.
Yes. So now I'm saying I'm starting a revolution where I'm gathering an army of young women, the menstruators, what I call the menstruators, to say, let's come together. Let's take back the menstrual economy. You know, this is our blood. It's our business. As a result, our blood is not just blood. It's our gold mine. You know, we don't need to raise capital for that. We just menstruate every month and we have to menstruate into our bank accounts. So that's where the revolution started.
That's very interesting.
Interesting and sad, like I said.
Lindiwe. That is Lindiwe from Lindiwe Sanitary Pads. We're gonna get into such issues as obviously overthrowing the male gaze in a lot of industries, and building a society and businesses that don't favor any particular gender or even religious sect or race, you know, any of the factions and sects that we are being divided into. So our second guest is an esteemed marketing and PR specialist, and the CEO of Pasina Mix, and that is Mr. Manzini Zungu. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
I'm of a mind that you just landed from Namibia. And you shot straight to us. We feel very special and blessed. Thank you very much for gracing us with your presence.
Thank you.
So same thing. We want to get to know your journey, because I feel as young people coming up and wanting to get into the entrepreneurship space, there's a lot of things that we need to understand about what makes an entrepreneur, and as well, what does it take to become a successful entrepreneur? Because it's one thing to become one, but a successful one is another different thing. And the three of you have managed to do that. So take us through your journey.
Yeah, mine is very simple. I'm born in a very small town in KZN.
Okay.
It's called Ngqothu. And I'm quickly taken to my grandparents' home, my maternal grandparents, who were priests of the Salvation Army at the time. And I'm raised in the church. I see my grandparents teaching, preaching. And the entrepreneurship and the entrepreneur in me was cultivated at that time, because for us to make ends meet, we needed to, my grandmom needed to cultivate vegetables at the backyard. And then I will
subsistence farming.
Yes, mm-hmm. I will move into the township selling that. And then at that time, I knew that there will be a day where I own my own business, mm-hmm. where I change the situation that I was faced with, and I change other young people's situation who were raised similarly, just like I have been. Mm-hmm. But that was my journey from home, and yes, of course, one needs education to be educated, and yes, I landed my first job on the music side of it, because within the church I was raised through the musical side of there was a music school that made me to be able to be employed at a young age of 22 years and as a performing musician. But as I was working at that young age, then I went back to school to be qualified in what I do now. But it's been a journey that one has got it from home, being raised by influential grandparents who were ministers of the religion, and having a mother who was working very far from where I was raised, because we needed to survive. Mm-hmm. And those were it was during apartheid years.
So what led to starting a PR agency, and how have you transitioned from music, which was your first love, and learning, and now becoming someone that runs a successful PR company?
Look, for me, it was about reputation.
Okay.
I saw the gap that certain brands needed their reputation to be attended to.
Sure.
You find clients that they get advice legally,
okay,
and they will act in a legal way,
sure,
but the answer, it's not a legal solution. You need a hug.
Okay.
So that is the gap. That's where we play. That when our clients are faced with reputational risk, mm-hmm. we are able to come in and fill in the gap, because there is always a legal advice, mm-hmm. but there is a reputation advice.
Sure.
And sometimes a reputational advice will be let's just go give a hug.
Interesting. and transitioning swiftly into our third and final guest on the panel, she is another very esteemed and distinguished woman. And in honor of Women's Month, I mean, I think our panel represents what we have aimed to achieve with all our August shows, and is the leading member of one of the, if not the biggest, incubation hub in Africa, River Sands Incubation Hub, and that is Generative. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Good afternoon, Bongi. Lovely to be here.
Awesome. So, tell us. Let's get into your history as well and background. Let's get to know Jenny.
Well, my primary background is in IT.
Okay.
Not in the kind of work I'm doing at the moment.
Interesting.
Yeah, I started my first software development company in my 20s.
Okay.
And did that for some time and then sold out of that when my daughter was born.
Okay.
And moved to a small village in KZN for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back into the hustle bustle of Johannesburg. And probably very fortunately, I went to work at Hollard Insurance Group. And that's a very vibrant company.
Okay.
It was in a high growth phase at the time. And I went there saying I'm only staying for 6 months.
Okay.
Because I'm not really a corporate person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 11 years later. I worked my way through various roles at Hollard, mm-hmm. spending the last few years as CIO, responsible for group IT. And that was a wonderful mix, you know, having been in the entrepreneurial trenches and then getting that
into the corporate
South rigor.
Africa as well, sure.
Yes. And then I started another software company called Innosys, which developed software for mostly London insurers and South Africa. And that was a bit more than 11 years ago. But now my daughter's self-supporting, and I have the luxury now of following my heart a bit and
sure.
thus more into the social entrepreneurship world and working with the River Sands.
So how did you get into this? Because there was a big budget that was set aside for this. I think 21st Century was one of the people that funded the project. So how did you come to now being placed as the leader of this massive project?
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. I've always been interested in social development
okay.
and education. It's always fascinated me, the idea that sometimes there's so much talent, so much ability, and there are a couple of missing ingredients.
Okay.
And if you can be part of bringing those ingredients, a whole lot more unlocks and happens, much beyond that small contribution. But sometimes without that ingredient, nothing happens. Already back in my 20s, I used to work in rural schools and townships and all over the show.
Okay.
And it was always a passion, but it was never a way that I could earn a living. Mm. It was always something where I needed to subsidize that from my day job.
Mm.
So that was a thread throughout my whole life in Innosys, my IT company.
Sure.
Our CSI project was that we initiated and funded,
mm-hmm.
was working with raising standards of maths literacy.
Oh.
And so I was working, I and colleagues were working in Dipslert.
Sure.
And my fellow River Sands director, Tracy Henley.
Okay.
And she and I soon saw that, you know, education is obviously vital and very important, but if kids can't see what's next,
sure.
I'm going to graduate and I'm going to have all these skills, but where am I going to work? How am I going to earn a living?
Mm.
And that therefore the vital thing was to put access to commerce, light industry, business,
mm-hmm.
much more accessible for young people in places like Dipslert.
Mm.
And Century Property Development had decided that they would also focus their efforts
on
the
that.
Same line.
Okay.
And much as they most famous for their residential estates, they soon saw that another residential estate was not what the world needed at that point. And that gave rise to the River Sands Commercial Park.
Mm.
And they allocated the prime piece of real estate to that.
Mm. Interesting.
In mm-hmm. the very beginning, I just insisted that I would have to be voluntary. I wasn't, I was saying, listen, I can't get sucked into this. I have other businesses to run. I'd love to help. I just want to be a volunteer.
Sure.
But it's such a cool project and so exciting and so much scale with the potential to be a game changer that before I knew it, 140% of my time and effort was there.
Was spent there. So we're going to listen to something from, I guess, one of the most distinguished speakers on multiple topics, but mostly leadership. And his name is Simon Sinek. And I want us to kind of build from what he's going to speak about.
What does it mean to be a leader in what you do?
To be a leader means one thing and one thing only. It means you have followers. That's it. You know, it's not about learning your style of leadership and how to adjust your style to fit the situation at hand. That's management, right? Leaders only have one thing. They have followers. A follower is somebody who raises their hand and volunteers to go where you're going. They raise their hand and volunteer to go in the direction that you're pointing. And so to lead others means that you have a clear vision of a world that does not yet exist, a world that could exist. And by articulating that cause, that vision, that purpose over and over and over again, it inspires people who believe what you believe, who want to see that world built, to join, to go with you, to figure out ways, you know? And so for me, in my work, what leadership means is articulating this world in which the vast majority of us wake up every single day, inspired to go to work, and come home every single day fulfilled by the work that we do. That doesn't mean we have to like every day, you know, but we can love every day. You don't like your children every day, but you love your children every day, right? And so the more I talk about this world that does not yet exist yet, because right now the world we live in, the vast majority of people, 90% plus, don't love what they do. They may like it, but they don't love it. When I talk about this world, it inspires others who believe what I believe and want to see this world built, join up and figure out in their own way how to advance that vision so it becomes real. My role is to continue to pound the pavement and put that vision out there.
Some interesting thoughts from Simon Sinek from about leadership, right? And the difference between leadership and management. What are some of your take homes, I guess, from this clip before I get into the next series of questioning? We'll go with anyone that wants to go first. Lindy?
I liked the fact that he said leadership is about having followers.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily followers in the true sense of people just following you because they are following you.
Yeah.
But because they believe.
What you believe.
Yes. Sure. They believe in your vision.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the followers are saying, we want to walk the journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We believe that through walking the journey with you, our lives are going to be transformed.
Hmm.
Right? So I've found that in my journey as an entrepreneur, I've had a lot of followers as well, right? But what I liked about the people that were following me was that they were also willing to offer a helping hand to me. So it's more of they're not just following me, they're also helping me. So we have as I lead, they're also leading me.
Oh,
so we are
okay.
Leading together.
Sure.
So the revolution has been growing through that,
sure.
You know, through them leading and us and me following.
So it's sort of as if you're not a head as a mediator between the vision and the people, but you are with the people, just pointing
in a
particular direction,
yes.
And they're willing to go with you in that particular direction.
And they are improving the vision as well.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. Hmm. So they
and it, I mean it allows the people that you lead as well to grow because. Even with them, it's onus on them to start thinking about where the vision should go or what it should look like,
mm-hmm.
And how the execution as well should come about.
And it's funny that those that we call followers usually mm-hmm. even come with improved version of the vision. You know, this is how you planned that it will work out. But you know what? It can work better this way.
Mm.
You know, so as a great leader would always say, "Oh yes," and they also run with that. Not to say I'm the leader, I'm the owner of the vision. Therefore, I can't take anything. You listen to me.
Sure.
That's not leadership in my books.
You know, someone said to me, someone very wise, that a good leader is an even better listener, because I guess. That's very key in growing any vision and growing any business. But what are your thoughts, Jenny and Manzini?
Strongly agree with both what Lindiwe said and what you said there. You know, if to achieve big things, you need the absolute full unleashing of everybody's talent, views, skills,
mm-hmm.
and that cannot happen if people only respond to the instructions or suggestions or ideas that you as the leader put forward.
Mm.
And if you limit progress to your particular bandwidth, oh my golly, that would be very sad.
Sure.
So that point, as Lindiwe made, about often the followers extend and enhance and improve on the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to a large extent, as a leader, a big part of the job, the way I see it, is making the road a bit clearer, mm-hmm. moving the rocks out of the way,
sure.
So that everyone can get on and bring their best, and helping make sure that we do keep across lots of talented, vibrant, high performance individuals, that we do keep an overhaul all clarity about where it is we are trying to get to, and then everyone just does their thing.
Interesting.
Yes, I think it was a brilliant clip, but it's about people's first.
Sure.
You as a leader, you come last. Hmm. And I've seen in business that most businesses goes down because of leadership.
Sure.
So leadership makes or breaks the leadership, the business itself. So
I mean, look at the political climate of South Africa and some of the poor decisions that are being made by some of the leaders, yes?
Yes. So if it's about people's first, everything follows. Processes, digital, the technology, it comes. The culture is very important. The values of the business is very important. But it's about people's first, the skills. Yes, if you put people's first, then you are bound to succeed.
Mm. And it's interesting that a lot of what's dominating, you know, the thoughts from what we just listened to is about allowing opportunity for growth, which I feel with the kind of structure that is there in South Africa for female or women, rather, and for young people. The way the system is, it's very limiting, because millennials, obviously, and Generation Z, which is coming after the millennials, they have a different way of analyzing and interacting with the world. They have a different way of working and coming up with ideas and being productive than what is currently there. And for women, obviously, now we speak about issues of equality and how that infringes on their potential, their contribution. And even we can come to even to the issue of race, to say certain races within certain companies, you know, they don't have a voice about certain decisions that are being made. We talk about the advertising industry, interior design, and some other industries. And what this does across the board is that it limits diversity in how the company creates a vision and how they execute the vision. So my question to you now is, how do you as leaders ensure that such things that limit certain people and certain classifications of your staff and people who are part of your team, you know, are not suppressed and they have a voice?
I'm in an industry that is female-dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in my exco, there's only two of us that are males, and the rest are females, because the industry itself dictates that you have women, because it is a PR space, it mm-hmm. is an advertising space, it is a reputation space.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in women. I believe that leaders in women can be trusted, are trusted.
Sure.
They have a better way of understanding,
mm-hmm.
and not because I want to sound controversial, but they are better when it comes to being corrupt, as everyone is talking corruption.
Sure.
But we have other issues. But yes, like in our business, I cannot put it on percentile, but the majority of our colleagues,
mm-hmm.
My colleagues, are women of stature,
mm-hmm.
And we are a business that has opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I mean, members of my exco, four of them, are able, well-experienced women.
Hmm. Interesting. Jenny or Lindy, who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Sure.
I think in my case, it's an army of women.
Okay.
It's an army of women in a sense that the menstruators, the consumers, mm-hmm. all of them exclusively women, right? So
I mean, they have a better understanding of what's going on, right?
And also because women are the only menstruators.
Sure.
So we're actually forced to deal with women, you know? And because of that, we are sensitive to the plight of women.
Okay.
Right? We are sensitive to the challenges of women,
mm-hmm.
right? And as women, as a woman leader that has experienced a lot of whatever is happening in the business world,
sure.
I'm very sensitive to the inclusion of women,
okay.
in the value chain of the business,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'll confidently say about 90% of our procurement and employment and all of that,
sure.
is dedicated to women, and has been women are beneficiaries,
sure.
right? And also in the issue of generational gap that you talk about,
mm-hmm.
that I have found that as a leader, sometimes, because when I was growing up, right, being an employee meant you've got to be at the office at 8 and then you knock off at a certain period, time and all of that.
Sure.
But I found that the young people that I've employed now, they've got a very different understanding from what what I was taught,
sure,
you know,
sure.
And what I experienced from my dad's businesses, mm-hmm. you know. So I had to do a lot of unlearning. You know,
sure.
I had to understand that if Lillian says, I'm working, but Lillian, you're not in the office. How are you working?
Sure.
You know, she's like, it's not about where I'm based. It's about productivity.
Sure.
And then I had to learn that, you know what, we need to unlearn a lot of things as leaders and adapt to the changes that are happening and also learn from what the young people are bringing into the table,
sure.
and we use that to grow the business.
And it's interesting that you should mention on the issues of mobility and being in an office or out of an office. There was an interesting study that was done about traffic, and apparently the working class, you spend on average about close to half your lifetime in traffic.
Wow.
And when you think about that, I mean, it's like, why are we even have to drive all the way to...
Why spend all that
exactly.
time on the...
And with some of the businesses, there's certain services that you don't really need people in the office to do or execute those certain responsibilities. Because you think about the difference between leadership and management is a lot of the people that want people in the office for duties they can execute outside of the office want to manage the people. And now we question their leadership. But Jenny, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think diversity is a much richer, broader thing than simply race and gender.
Sure.
In South Africa, we tend to be very focused on those two elements. But it's a much richer thing. You have within, you must, you know, span race and gender, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, and age is another very obvious one.
Yes.
But even those are the sort of obvious divisors.
Mm-hmm.
There's much richer beyond that, even. It's the technical engineering mindset versus the marketing creative mindset.
Hmm.
It's how you grew up. Did you grow up in a farm or in the city? Did you were you from a background where you had to struggle livelihood-wise, or were you well off? And I'm happy to say that South Africa's experiences are no longer defined simply by race and gender. You have both races and both genders having both of those mixes of backgrounds and views. And you get such a wonderful richness of decision-making, of ideas, of how to do things, if you can bring all of that together.
Mm.
It's one of the things I have to work so, I constantly am working on, is that we do not want some sort of average, harmonized, vanilla-flavored
sure.
reason at River Sands. We
sure.
want that richness and diversity of thoughts and approaches. But it takes work. You know, there are people who grew up in a household, in households where dad's word is law.
Mm-hmm.
You don't express an opinion.
Mm. Patriarchy.
Yes. And if the man walks in the room, everyone keeps quiet.
Sure.
And so it takes, it's kind of building on Lindiwe's point. There's a lot of unlearning that has to happen. And you can't really simply teach that as a skill. I think it's a case of, as a leader, creating an environment where it is perfectly safe to disagree.
Hmm.
It's entirely safe to disagree. It's entirely safe to bring a disruptive idea into the mix.
Mm.
There's common rules of courtesy and time and place,
and
those are part of what oils the wheels.
Mm.
But you must foster those differences of view and bring, let everyone bring the very best that they can.
Allow them to exist. And I mean, if we start approaching leadership like that, we'll avoid incidences where we get a young black boy wearing a hoodie with the coolest monkey in the jungle, and then face backlashes. And we've seen it in the advertising industry mostly, because I think it's, if we think about visualizing things, and the nearest thing to mind is a lot of the mistakes that the advertising industry has done because of the lack of diversity in voices within the companies. How would you individually define your leadership style, and how has that helped you to be successful in running your business?
Look, for me, I consult a lot with my exco, and I consult a lot with my menco
okay.
people. because those are the core of my business. Those are the leaders right there. They are in the trenches, operationally and otherwise.
So sure.
I take their advice, I act on their advice, and we go ahead and we go and implement.
Sure.
So in our business, it's not the top down bottom, but it's an inclusive approach whereby you come with an idea.
Sure.
You see it to the end of it. Not that your idea will be shut down. No, we're not interested in this. So you come with your idea, we create it, and you see it into a product itself. It's very important. And people feel part of that organization because they are not just there to get the experience of working with a client like McDonald's South Africa or of working with a client in the mining industry.
But sure.
Their ideas, their creativity, they see it to its inception. We are fortunate to have clients that allows us to be in the space of being creative. Not just it's based on this brief. We come up with our ideas that gets to the market.
It's interesting that you mentioned that as soon as a person has a voice about something, also you don't need to motivate them because they'll be self-motivated because they are being recognized.
Yes. Yes, the talent is recognized. They're self-motivated because there's in our space, like you said, that some people are not performing well when they are told to come to
what
their
to
office.
Do. Yes.
You find colleagues that are living at night. Nobody has told them to do that.
Yeah.
It's because they have so much work that they have to deliver on. Because our work is to it's customer satisfaction.
Sure.
And it's to be disruptive. We are constantly creative. So and we are playing at the global stage because the people we serve in South Africa, things have changed.
Sure.
We are in a digital era. Mm-hmm. You can't take for granted the work that you do because you are serving someone who has just been served in New York a week ago.
Sure.
So we are...
That compares.
Yes. Mm. We can't look inwardly. You look at the global stage. So we have to perform at that level. And to have a client like McDonald's assist us to be on top of our game at the global level.
Interesting. Lindy, where?
So I always say, as a leader, I'm the vision carrier.
Okay.
Right? Now, I've always said, I want to be surrounded by people that are much more smarter than me.
Okay.
Because the vision is so much great, such that alone I cannot make it.
Sure, sure.
So I've got this vision about the revolution, and we've been rolling it out. And I say, the revolution is not for the elite, right? It's for people at grassroots level. It's for a day-to-day women that can't afford the basic sanitary towel.
Sure.
Right. So in my leadership, I always say it's about being inclusive, right? So everybody needs to find a space at Lindiwe Sanitary Pest.
Sure.
Right? So it's not only for the elite, it's not only for the most educated, it's not only for, it's for everybody. Mm. So in leadership, in me leading the vision, I've always tried to include everybody, make sure that everybody is part of the company, feel like they are part of the company, whether you're from the cleaner to the receptionist and those that are a part of our ESCO. Mm. So for me, it's about being inclusive as a leader, like I said, not just following, but you are also part of leadership.
I think it was Napoleon Hill that wrote a book, Think and Grow Rich, and in the book he speaks about, he recounts a lot of experiences that a lot of leaders have had, and he classifies them under topics and then breaks down the topic itself, and under like you were saying, that you picking people that are smarter than you to work with you to execute a vision that's bigger than you and all of you combined. He references Henry Ford and he says, when he started the company, there was no 8-cylinder car at the time. And he said, this is the vision that I want to execute, but I can't do that. So I need engineers that are smarter than me, and I'm going to spend all the money I have and all the time and energy I have to support them so that we can execute that vision. I think everything else is history.
Yeah, and it's always a tricky balancing act because you need to create the time and space for people to express their views. They need to genuinely be heard and feel heard.
Sure.
At the same time, you have a need to sustain a pace. People feel have to feel that clear decisions come out. Mm. There's a thing that Jeff Bezos of Amazon often says, which I just love, and that is, and that applies to all of us, whatever your level is. We hear, we debate, and whether it's me or anyone else, there might be a thing where we say, listen, I disagree, but I commit. So you commit to a decision that's been taken, knowing that your views have been heard, but it's not going to go the way you would have wanted.
Yes.
But and so you still put your full shoulder behind the wheel. And because you don't feel railroaded into that, you still with a whole heart put your full shoulder to the wheel in executing someone else's ideas, and it's wonderful to be proved wrong in that situation, you know, to find out that your concerns as to why something wouldn't work were not borne out, and it's worked fabulously well.
Very interesting. What are some of the challenges that individual, and we'll pick one major one, as a CEO and as a leader that you've come across in running the businesses, and how have you come from that?
So for me, the biggest challenge, like I said to you, I started straight from varsity. I went into running my own business. So there's a lot of challenges in starting your own business and growing your own business. So the biggest challenge was to remain in the business, you know, because temptation was there at times to say, you know what, this thing is not working, you know, go find a job or go do this and that, you know. So the challenge and an achievement at the same time was that I had to make a decision, and I stood by it, and I've seen myself succeed because I stayed true to the vision that I've had since I was a young girl, you know. So, yeah.
Interesting. Mr. Manzini?
Getting the right talent.
Okay.
Getting the right skills.
Sure.
You spoke about millennials earlier. Not that, but there's a lot of movement, especially in our industry, because people are looking to work with a particular client as well. They don't just move because they don't like your business, but they move because they want to go and work with that brand. Working for that brand is her dream, or it is his dream. So finding the right talent, finding the right skills at the right time. There are skills, but there's a lot of turnover of skills. I think that is the challenge, and getting opportunities. We always hear that there are opportunities, and I want to challenge corporate South Africa that they must start looking at good black businesses that are in this country. Like us, we're very proud that we are the first black organization to do business with the likes of McDonald's South Africa, and we were the first black business to do the business with the Association of Mine Workers Construction Union, AMCU. And one thing that was a challenge for us was the Marikana massacre, but we've been part of that in terms of, as a business, we've pledged to build two homes for two families that lost the fathers and the uncles.
Interesting.
At the massacre.
Jenny?
Yeah, this question of not just finding talent, but continuing to provide an environment in which each of them feel they are growing, so that you maintain and keep the best of that talent, is every leader's ongoing challenge. For Riversand specifically, I think our biggest ongoing challenge is that our ambitions are very, very much bigger than our checkbook. We want to see this economy transformed, and we want to see it transformed through growth, and that requires every bit of creativity and intellect that we can bring to bear. So we're always looking to work much broader than just our team, and to bring those contributions into a cohesive thrust.
So what we're going to do now is we are going to transition into a segment called Legal with Themba Mnguni. But before we let you guys go because we want your final thoughts. We're just going to transition into this segment, and I'm going to chat to Temba real quick, and then we'll get back to you just now. All right, welcome back. You're still with the Youth Leadership Platform team. And right now I'm joined by another esteemed guest and a lawyer by profession. And his name is Temba Mnguni. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome, awesome. I'd like you to sit closer to the mic there. Please, someone adjust his mic. So what we've done is we've introduced a segment for all of you entrepreneurs who are listening to and have been listening to the Youth Leadership Platform. And we want to help you to make your business a success. That's why we've brought you some amazing guests in studio. And now we are going to have someone from a legal background to help you get through some of the legal issues that startup entrepreneurs face. So Temba, I think the first question that we want to ask you is what types of companies are there, and what does that mean? So you've got your closed corporations and other things, and what do those mean?
So basically, the companies are regulated by the Companies Act, and there are two broad categories. The okay. first one is profit companies. The other one is non-profit companies. Then when it comes to profit companies, there are about, I think, five of them.
Okay.
The first one being private company, which everyone does. There's also personal liability companies. An example of that, it's like lawyers. Professionals, when they start a company, sure. they have to go for personal liability companies such okay. as doctors. Then there's also state-owned companies, and but those corporations, they are done away with. They don't look, they still exist, but you can't register it anymore.
Oh,
but
some via CIPC.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So how does one go about registering a company?
Okay, so many people prefer to use agents. There are people who have a business of registering companies.
Okay.
So the simplest way is just to contact an agent, give that agent contact details, sign a directorship form where you consent to be a director of the company,
okay.
submit a certified identity document. Alternatively, you can go to SIPC's website and follow the procedure.
Oh, CIPC.
Yeah.
What's the link to the site?
I think if you just type on Google CIPC, then it will appear.
Okay. And then which laws and documents regulate a company?
So generally, all laws of the country apply okay. to companies. But the big one, it's the Companies Act. So many lawyers refer to the Companies Act as the Bible of a company because it sets the limits of the company, the procedure on how you sell shares, and any other restrictions which, the laws imposed on a company. But there are various laws which apply to to all companies. But the big one, it's the Companies Act.
Oh, interesting. So there's a buzz about and around companies having their clients sign agreements. Is that important, and why is that important?
So for me, currently I work for a big company, and if there's one thing I learned is that it is very important to get clients or suppliers to sign agreements.
Okay.
Because, for example, for a customer, let's say I'm selling books.
Sure.
Then I deliver on Tuesday. The customer will say, but Temba, you're supposed to deliver on Monday. Then there's a dispute.
Sure.
So it is always a good idea to have things in writing to avoid disputes. And another reason why should companies sign agreements is because, let's say I sell you a cell phone and it's defective.
Sure.
What must happen then? Mm. So normally in an agreement, you would regulate that you must bring it back within 5 days, failing which you don't have any other claim. So it is very important for not just big businesses, but for small businesses to have written agreements, whether it's with suppliers
but
or customers.
But now, say I'm from a township and I want to start a business and I can't afford a lawyer. What kind of help can I get to have such systems in place?
So there's something we call pro bono. You can go to legal aid.
Okay.
You don't even pay a cent. Then they're going to give you free legal advice. You can go to Vets University. They have Vets Law Clinic where if you can submit documents showing that you cannot afford a lawyer, they'll assist you.
Before we let you go, what kind of advice do you have today for our startup entrepreneurs?
Okay, so the biggest advice, it's simple, but it's very important. It can either kill or make a business.
Okay.
It's what we spoke about. Entrepreneurs shouldn't just sign any agreement. For example, let's say an investor comes to you and say, Temba, I like your business. Can you please sell me shares?
Mm.
Sign the sale of shares agreement. I would
say,
you mustn't just rush to sign and get the money. You must get someone to review it so that you can know what you in for. So the biggest advice and something which I've learned, I normally go to on litigation with matters with big businesses, and it all goes back to what did we sign. What you sign, you must review and you must fully understand it. So that's the biggest advice in law, because at the end of the day, we can fight about what we agreed on.
Awesome. We look forward to having you more and more on the show. How do people follow your journey and get in contact with you? What are your social media handles?
Okay, so on Facebook, I'm Temba Mguni. Instagram, Temba Mguni. Then I also have a consulting company where I offer legal services. It's called Pepi Consulting, and people can get me on 0813901315.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Temba, for joining us on the Youth Leadership Platform today. So as parting messages from our in-studio guests, that is our CEOs, what kind of message would you like to send to young people out there that are aspiring and are looking up to you quickly?
I would say to young people, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, but it's doable. And there's this Shangan sort of sentence that I like, that I always motivate myself with.
Okay.
That says, "Bukulu bzonzibe," meaning greatness looks good on me.
Interesting.
So I would say to a young person, if you are down there, Kwamashu or Mamelodi or wherever,
mm-hmm.
So whatever you can dream, you can achieve.
Awesome. Mr. Manzini?
Stay focused.
Sure.
If you fail, keep trying. If you fail again, keep trying. If you fail for the third time, keep trying. It is important. You must never give up. And I always say this, there's two ways. You can make it as an entrepreneur and be wealthy, but yes, you can make it as a corporate guru.
Sure.
And be wealthy.
Wow. okay, Jenny.
Well, first of all, I very much second what Lindiwe and Manzini just said.
Sure.
I would say improve your own luck. Make yourself luckier by putting yourself in the path of luck. I listened to a wonderful TED talk this morning.
Okay.
Saying that luck is not a lightning bolt. It's more like a wind. And you have to be able to set your sail to catch that wind and push you in the direction you want to go.
Wow.
And that's about growing your skills. It's about getting out there so that you are meeting people. And it's about embracing relationships with a mind to what value you can bring to the relationship, not just what you can get back.
Wow.
And you'll find yourself in all kinds of paths of good luck.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Youth Leadership Platform. We just have one more person on the line. So a particular cement making company has started a wonderful project called the PPC Imaginarium. And what it aims to do is to help young artists, contemporary, textile and otherwise, design artists and students to showcase their work, as well to be helped with necessary resources to further their careers in design. So on the line, we have Daniel van der Merwe, who is a distinguished architect and lecturer, and who's also heading this PPC Imaginarium. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Yes, good afternoon.
Awesome.
Great to be on your show.
Thank you for joining us on the show. So can you kindly give us like a brief of the PPC Imaginarium and what it hopes to achieve in a paragraph?
Yes, well, you know what's interesting is that the call for registration for the new cycle that's upcoming is actually going to be our fifth award cycle. So it's amazing how quickly time goes. I mean, it's 5 years in the making of the PPC Imaginarium.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy to report to you and to your listeners that this has become the biggest platform of its kind in South Africa to support emerging artists and to profile and support them in terms of, you know, their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great way, and I think a good example of how corporate South Africa can assist the arts and assist our innovation culture in South Africa.
Mm. How do our listeners be part of this? The ones obviously in the design space.
Sorry, I didn't hear your question.
So how do designers or anyone that wants to apply? How do they go about doing that?
Yes. Okay. So what we've done is we're trying to run the campaign as fast as possible on a digital, in a digital way. So it's on our website, it's on Facebook, it's Pinterest, it's Twitter, and Instagram. So the process of registration is very simple. It's online on our website. It's ppcimaginarium.co.za. And, the idea is to allow people to register until the end of November this year. That gives us a pre-approval phase, and once it's been approved, we will request and invite any emerging artists or designers then to submit work for judging.
Mm-hmm.
That would be at the end of February next year, 2019, at six different various venues all over South Africa. Which will then be open for judging and hopefully selection to become part of the finalist collection, which will travel South Africa in the form of exhibition.
Wow. Okay. So you said the website is ppcimaginarium.co.za.
That's correct. And we really would like to invite your listeners to also join us and follow us on Facebook. We send out monthly newsletters with stacks of information. So again, you could request to be signed up or to subscribe to this newsletter. Not only does it give you news and profile of what's happening in the design and innovation world in South Africa and in the world, but it also has very valuable tips in terms of how to use cement and concrete as a very versatile material to create, of course, any artwork or industrial design or whatever you wish to manifest as an innovative idea.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for the information, and I guess for the platform as well. We look forward as well to having you in studio to speak Design South Africa and how we can best help the youth in the design space to be able to, I guess, achieve at an international level, and as well how we can direct some of the funds from the country to help aid that youth to be that successful. Thank you so much for being part of the Youth Leadership Platform.
Thank you so much. Thanks awesome. For being back.
Thank you for choosing cliffcentral.com and mostly the Youth Leadership Platform. It is at Simply Bongani across all social media platforms. And from us, that is me and the producer, Uze Ketelo, shout outs for putting all of this together. It is good day and God bless.
This is cliffcentral.com.